This is John Costa with Rob Watson, and we're here on Spotlight on Art, our weekly roundup of all things interesting to do with art. But that doesn't mean that it's a what's-on guide. What it actually means is this is interesting people that we come across. And we're very lucky this week. Our guest is someone that I've had a few conversations with, and you can actually not talk to him for a couple of months, and then when you have a chat with him, it's like we met last week at the Phoenix. I'd like to think that. And it's Ken the Actor. How are you?
I'm fantastic, thanks. Yeah, it's great to be here. And I like it to be that it doesn't matter how long we haven't spoken, we can always just reach out.
We can just pick up and get with it. Okay, so before we dive into it, Rob and I always start with the weather. How are we doing, Rob?
I thought for a moment that you'd forgotten about that.
No, not at all, mate. I was trying to catch you out. I wanted to get a dirty look from you, a little side glance that I'd forgotten.
Well, isn't it glorious?
Weather. It's lovely.
It's like, I mean, it's dry at the moment. We could do some rain. But that's always the, you know, we've had plenty of years of rain and gloom, and it's just nice to have some consistent sunshine for more than a few hours and actually running into a few days. So I'm happy.
I always say to people, it's the kind of weather that's a bit like being on holiday, you know, where it gets to nighttime and you can put your shorts and T-shirt out for the next day and guarantee that you're going to be wearing them. That's quite nice, especially as a bike rider.
And a friend, somebody I was chatting to the other day, they said they were walking through the streets, this is in Loughborough, and they said, it looked like people were on holiday mode. And it's like, oh, already, you know, it's like, that's good. It's a false, don't get drawn into that false sense of security about this. It is the UK.
It may well be the British summer. Absolutely. So, Ken, before we dive into it now, I feel really bad now because it's actually got to the point where I've introduced you as Ken the Actor, which is all part of your rebrand, which I'm fascinated to hear more about and how that affects your pipeline of work as an actor. But what is actually your surname?
It's Ken Ogborn.
That was it. God, yeah, I was trying to rack my brain. I thought, I'm now so used to you being Ken the Actor, which obviously is genius, isn't it? Is that the idea behind it?
I hope it is. It's easier to remember, and it's kind of unique. I don't think there are many Kens my age anymore. There used to be.
It's quite an old name, isn't it? It's a bit like John as well, isn't it? Or Brian or Malcolm, things like that. Rob. Yeah, even Rob, probably. Robert. I don't really know anyone called Robert, apart from yourself.
Yeah, not many people use it that much.
So you used to get called Bob as well, didn't you, when you were younger?
Yeah, family name is Bobby.
Bobby Watson.
Yeah.
Oh, you sound like a footballer. And that ended the football 1950s conversation.
1950s footballer, yeah.
It was really bad at tackling, yeah.
There were lots of good Kens in show business in the mid-20th century, you know, Kenny Moore, Kenneth Williams. Obviously, probably the latest one is Ken Branagh, but even Ken Branagh is a very late baby boomer. And my age and younger, there are hardly any Kens. But of course, I do benefit from the Barbie film name recognition. Yeah.
Well, anywhere else you'd be a 10, wouldn't you, really? So that was the song, I believe, that he sung. So quick one. You were talking about, you know, you were saying to me about being, you know, Ken the Actor. Now, it's interesting because Rob and I, whenever we talk about going networking, it's like, I'm not interested in what anyone does. It's what are you interested in? Well, of course, there's not many people that you'd come across that would be an actor. So actually leading with that, it's not like, you know, Ken the Surveyor.
Or that's going, right.
You know, Ken the estate agent.
The accountant.
Yeah. Ken the accountant, yeah. Ken the actor. What kind of response does it elicit normally when you tell people or introduce yourself like that?
Usually an eyebrow raise and a lean inwards, which are body language signs of interest.
Absolutely.
Which is kind of why I started to run with it. It all happened kind of accidentally. Networking event, everyone puts Ken Ogborn, actor, writer, director, and they put that huge list of competencies underneath that name.
Which instantly makes people think, I'm not interested in that. I'm not interested in that. I don't have time for that because I'm here to get some work, or I'm looking for someone to do a bit of work for me, and then instantly dismiss all of those things and what they encompass.
That's right. And so the benefit of the speed of Ken the Actor is it means straight away they know about me and then I can ask about them.
Ah, you see. I reckon he's read a book, Rob. What do you think? Networking for the initiate.
Well, I hope it's more than just a kind of self-help guide book. I hope it's kind of Shakespeare and Dostoevsky and all that kind of stuff. That,
thou dost talk too much about that particular subject, dost thou not? And there we go, trying to get a bit of acting in.
We get me, which is the boring bit, out of the way with, on the label, and then I'm into the interesting bit, which is them.
And I guess being interested in them is also fodder for you as an actor, drawing on who they are as a person and characteristic traits that you can bring into characters that you can create.
Curiosity about people is why I'm an actor. So when you look back on your life, you see the common strand in your behavior. And the common strand in my behavior has always been this curiosity about people. So school, I was the guy who was told off for talking at the back of the room. And that's because I was talking to people about what they were doing, what they cared about, who was dating who when you're 16 years old. But then when I got out into the world of work, I realized that the most important parts of my jobs and the bits I loved the most were when I got to be curious about people. So I was a clerk at the Royal Infirmary for a while. I was interested in the patients and writing down and noting their histories. And then when I got into marketing, I was interested in the audiences we were talking to, because that's a group of people. When I was in sales, I was interested in the customers that I was talking to. That's an interesting person I've got to learn about. And then now I'm an actor, I've got to be interested in people on the page.
Now, there's many sort of actors, but I've heard comedians say this, you know, where like the school teacher goes, oh, Tina even says it, like, you know, when she's like gobbing off, she'll be being incredibly gobby and Braunston-like about something. And she said, her teacher said to her, oh, there's a stage with your name on it somewhere, Barton, like, you know what I mean? And I think with comedians, you can imagine like Peter Kay or Paddy McGuinness, you can hear teachers saying that to them. Did a teacher ever say to you, Ogborn, there's a stage with your character on it?
Actually, no. But what did come out at school was a willingness to get up in front of people and perform. And that was partly because I've always been quite articulate. So people are scared about speaking in front of other people because they're worried about fumbling their words. But at school, we do that presentation about, you know, the Second World War or the French Revolution or the oxygen cycle or whatever
volcanoes.
It might be. Exactly, yeah. Volcanoes. You've got to present about these things. So you get your sugar paper out, you do your mind map, and then you stand up and you present that to the class. That was always going to be me. I've got a way to marshal ideas together. I can speak off the cuff by drawing ideas together in organized groups. And then that meant I was good at those presentations and that willingness to get up and kind of encapsulate and summarize ideas and then present those ideas to other people is what an actor is doing all the time.
Now, we're sitting here talking today, obviously, lovely sunny day with Rob, about Ken the actor. But what kind of careers conversations did you have at school when you were like 15, 16, you know, getting out of GCSEs or O-levels, whatever, without asking your age, with the careers thing? Well, actually, your oratory skills would lend you to being this or that, you know?
Well,
possibly a politician.
Back then, I think the careers discussions were about what you wanted to do, whereas I think careers discussions should be about how you want to behave. So back then, what I wanted to do was talk with my mates and discover ideas and people. But there aren't any job descriptions called that, people discoverer. There are lots of job descriptions about being a scientist or a policeman or a doctor or a lawyer or whatever it might be. But the thing is, what I love to do is talk about people and ideas. So that's the behaviour I want to do. But when you go through life, you start to realize that you can do those behaviors. Talking to people and talking about people and ideas can be done when you're a scientist, because you can talk about a group of patients. You can talk about the ideas you've got for a vaccine, or you could be an architect. You could talk about the people who are going to use the building, and you can talk about the ideas that you're going to have to help those people use the building. But an actor also gets to talk about people and ideas. So I would urge anyone at the careers choosing stage to think about how you want to behave every day, rather than the type of job you want to do.
Now, was this something that you chose, or was this something that was suggested to you by a, well, incredibly insightful person, that this could be a good way of you using your skills?
No, I definitely chose this.
Remember the moment? Was there something that you saw? And was it live, or was it something you were watching on telly or at the movies?
It was definitely an experience I had at university, really. In school, yes, there'd been times where you've got to get into a group and sing a song for your drama class, or there would be something to do for an end of term concert. But I was never very enamored of doing that, although I did love the rehearsal and the creation stage. What I found at university was that I was at the Freshers' Fair. A friend of mine, Harry, he now runs the Tea House Theatre in London. Harry came up to me as a former professional actor, and he went, do you want to play with swords? And I went, yes, I'd love to play with swords. He goes, great, join the Theatre Society. Sign up with Chloe just here. So I signed up with Chloe. I went along to my first audition. And even at the first audition, he had a parade of actors walk across the stage. They stand in the middle of the stage, they deliver a line and then walk off. And he sent a bunch of people home, but he didn't send me home. And so straight away I thought, well, maybe I can do this then. And then after that, the spark was lit and the flame started burning, and I've had to be an actor and performer ever since.
Wow. I just love the fact that this guy was like, do you like playing with swords? I mean, let's say that was either going to drive away people or immediately hook you in that I've found my tribe.
So bombastic. He was so one of those men that claps you on the back straight away, slightly too hard. but I stood there and I took that clap on the back. And I said, yes, I'd love to play with swords. And Harry and I went away and played with swords. And we did a production of Macbeth, which was my favourite play and still is my favourite play.
Now, Ken, one of the things that we were talking about the other week, and we'd not spoken for a couple of months, and we had a conversation. Actually, you wished me a happy birthday, which was very kind of you. And we got in, and we started speaking the next day. And you were saying, when we were talking about Ken the actor, and you were saying that you have to engage with people about 11 times before maybe you might get some work out of it. One, I want to talk about that 11 times and where did that number come from? And I think my comment and my response was, well, with what you do, I mean, for example, last Christmas, you can tell us a little bit about the train in Birmingham and you were doing the conductor from Polar Express. But what you're really looking for is not necessarily the gig this Christmas, you're looking the Christmas beyond and what you do. So actually, as a pipeline for someone who is a freelance creative, which I guess you are as an actor, your pipeline's actually quite long, isn't it? Rob and I might be looking for someone to ask us to do a bit of work, or can we do it more? Would it fit with us? With you, you're saying, well, am I free in 2027 to be able to do it?
There is an element of planning that far ahead, but frequently, I mean, the most important thing about being an actor is showing up on time. The second most important thing about being an actor is getting on with everyone on the set immediately. And the third most important thing about being an actor is how good you are. So your talent is the third most important thing. So frequently, you'll lay the groundwork by meeting producers and so on. They might like the energy of Ken the actor, you see, and then Ken the actor goes into the mental Rolodex. And then when they get let down 3 days before their show needs to go on, then they ring Ken the actor.
So who's going to turn up with that level of enthusiasm, exactly, and bring that, you know, which is ultimately what they were hopefully looking for.
Exactly that. You turn up on time because they've been let down. You get on with everyone because maybe the other guy was a bit of an idiot sometimes to people. And then you're good as well. And this producer who's had to plug that gap at short notice can't believe their luck.
Is it a challenge to be this positive all the time about it? Because again, it must be a lot of Ken the actor, the nice guy. And forgive me for saying that, because again, at the end of the day, you know, I've known you, I've met you. You came over and approached Tina and I at the Phoenix and you said, lots of people seem to be coming and saying hello to you and walking past. What is it you guys do? And I remember when you went away, we spoke to you about 20 minutes, I looked at Tina, I was like, no one's ever done that to us before. And I think that's how we became connected, and yes, I'm really why you're sitting here today.
That's right, you know? That's right, yeah.
Putting yourself out there.
It's not a challenge because I have this curiosity, and I think the most important thing anyone can bring to a creative job, in fact, the most important thing anyone can bring to the world is their curiosity about it. And the ability to be open to new people and new experiences, and most importantly of all, new ideas, is the most important thing you'll bring to any workplace and any relationship. And that's really what drives me. That positivity always encourages me to look outward, and that's a positive feedback loop, I guess. I keep getting new ideas and new opportunities thrown at me, and so that keeps me excited about life, I think.
And is that a trait that you look for in others, but also in actors? So therefore, rather than saying who your favourite actor is, what's your favourite trait, and what character or actor do you think would that person? Well, who would you nominate?
I think most of my favourite actors have that burning curiosity and the openness to new ideas. There are there are people who, you know, they routinely open themselves up to challenging roles. They routinely open themselves up to roles which might be people they'd actually hate in real life. Excuse me. And you would want to discover what motivates someone you have nothing in common with. So that endless discovery. Actors have to be students of every part of life as well. If you've got to play a doctor, you've got to learn about medicine. If you want to play a spy, you've got to learn about spying. Actors are relentlessly curious people, and the best actors are always like that. You know, you look at someone like Cate Blanchett, who's a heroine of mine. She is always looking to do something she's never done before and to discover something about the world that she doesn't know already.
And I remember reading certain things about, like, you know, Viggo Mortensen, for example, you know, doing Lord of the Rings, and, you know, he'd get really into character, and then sort of, you know, with the horses and sword play and carry the sword everywhere and sort of, you know, wouldn't wash, and really kind of got into that kind of grimy looking character. Is that the sort of thing that interests you, that kind of level of immersion?
I think that level of immersion is done really to give the actor an idea of the mindset of the character they're trying to be. And the mindset of a character they're trying to be is often going to be driven by the memories of that character. So, for example, if you're going to have to ford a river as, you know, Aragorn, you're going to have to know some of the field knowledge that Strider, Aragorn, would have known in Middle Earth. How do you cross a river and how to do it at the best point, and where's the best point, and how do you do it safely? So I think what every actor is trying to do is inhabit the memories of that character, because everything we do right now in this very second, from second to second and moment to moment, is the product of the memories we have that have enabled us to negotiate the world successfully up till now. And a character crossing the river has done that 100 times before. So I think that's why Viggo is trying to do that. It's not something I'd try to do maybe physically, because we don't have time to do that. But I do try to do it psychologically and mentally, and try to think. There's a technique called the magic if, which I may be on shaky ground here if I say it's Stanislavski, but I think it's Stanislavski's the magic if. It's, what if I was Aragorn trying to cross a river, how would I approach that?
So this is John Costa, we're with Rob Watson on Spotlight on Art, and our special guest this week, very special guest this week, is Ken the actor. Ken, again, thanks for joining us now. I mean, you were talking there about, you know, Viggo Mortensen. We've been talking about that kind of pipeline, your favourite character and stuff like that. I mean, what it always seems to me, you know, when someone gets typecast, you know, once you play James Bond, you're in for the run. You can't do anything else, and then you'll always be that. And then you have to do something completely outrageous. I'm thinking of Daniel Craig in, you know, was the Onion, Glass Onion, playing these characters that are completely different from everybody. Daniel Radcliffe, I'm thinking of as well. In that essence, is there that kind of wish to become someone that, if only I was typecast, if only I got involved in the Marvel universe, against, well, actually, I want to be known as a serious actor who played good characters?
Well, you've got a chance to go broad, or you've got a chance to go deep. And when you become James Bond, you've got a chance to go deep into who James Bond is. And no matter the fantastical situations that Mr. Bond finds himself in, there's actually always going to be a kernel of humanity that you've got to get to, and it's to make that as deep as possible. And Daniel Radcliffe for Harry Potter had actually a gift of a part, because Harry Potter has so many memories to draw on, even in his young years, and so much heritage to learn about before that. So it's that depth which Dan Radcliffe would have run into. After that, you do look for breadth. And again, the curiosity of the actor is going to be key. Cate Blanchett has played Galadriel in Lord of the Rings, a supernatural elf who's tens of thousands of years old, right through to playing Tar a sexually exploitative and abusive conductor using her power to exploit other people, kind of thing. And that is a range which is enviable. Probably my hero of breadth is Daniel Day-Lewis. I think he's the ultimate of ultimate actors, kind of thing. He tries to do breadth of roles, but also go deep into each one, which I think is what I would dream of and aspire to do.
Hmm. If someone came to you now for some advice, I want to be an actor, would you be looking at their age? Would you be looking at their way they were talking to you and their traits? Would you be looking at, had they done it before? Because often people say, oh, you know, I've decided to be this. What would your... Would your levels of your filter that you'd run them through before you gave them some very honest advice?
First off, I'd look at their curiosity level. I really do.
I'm not pitching you here, by the way. I'm quite happy doing this podcast every Wednesday.
This indulges your curiosity, which is absolutely wonderful to see. And I know you're an accomplished documentary maker, so that's driven by curiosity as well. I would look for their level of curiosity. Now, curiosity means you'll suffer, kind of thing. And by suffer, I mean that you'll read late into the night and then want to go to bed, but you won't, you'll carry on reading. The ability to suffer means that you'll go to a rehearsal and then you'll be absolutely exhausted. Someone will say, "Should we finish for the day?" And you'll say, "Actually, I'd like to go for another shot." You'll drive yourself harder and harder to discover more and more. And that's really the key trait I'd look for in an actor. After that, to get into acting, I'd say go and act, that you must practice it. And then also what I'd look for is the ability to change completely a preconception. And so you might think that James Bond would be delivered as incredibly suave, but does James Bond ever laugh and smile? If I directed you as James Bond to laugh and smile, could you do it? And I'd want to see the humour you could bring to it. So I'd look for adaptability.
Rob, it's an interesting one, this, isn't it? Because I'm trying to think of all the other people that we've had on from Spotlight on Art and Heritage. Some interesting things. I mean, you know, Tim Grayson sort of inventing his game in lockdown, Tatakai, and doing that, through to people that are, you know, photographers and creatives, through to people that have got heritage projects and stuff. But I think you kind of float across both. It's fascinating, isn't it?
Yeah, your approach. I suppose the question that's come to my mind is what's the opportunities that you've got in Leicester and, say, the Midlands more generally, or the UK more generally, in terms of regular good work? How would you describe where we are with maybe our theatre? For example, my criticism is a lot of our theatre is kind of touring productions of movies. We're not necessarily generating, we don't have repertory theatre in the same way that we used to. And, you know, where are we with that kind of, you know, it's a job, but is it really what people want to be doing? I just, you know, your view on that, you know.
That's a really complex subject. The opportunities are driven by, ultimately, by funding. So we operate in a country which doesn't fund the arts properly. I was recently at Equity Conference, the Union for Actors, and there was a motion there to ask for a campaign to begin to get 0.5% of GDP spent on the arts. Now, that's the arts generally, not just the performing arts, but the arts generally. So for arts council to get 0.5% of GDP. Now, when you have scarce funding, you have a direct effect, which is that shows don't get made. But you also have an indirect effect, which becomes risk-averse behaviour in the people that do produce the show. So let's say you've got, you know, you've got a paucity of funding, you only get three shows produced in your region. Well, those shows, because of the scarce funding, have to succeed. So this means that the producer of that show is not going to take a risk on actors they've never worked with before. They're going to use the actors that they've worked with for years. And so the side effect of scarce funding is to reduce the opportunity for new hires. Also, Equity Conference was highlighted the inability to fail those three productions that get put on in that scarce funding environment must succeed so that they can justify that small amount of money being spent on them again for their next project. So really the opportunity in any region is going to be driven by public money. Now, we also have an argument about whether private money can fill the gap. And in any other area of innovation, for example, in scientific innovation, we've very clearly seen that it's primary innovation, the most earth-shattering innovations happen in the public sector. For example, the invention of the touchscreen was developed by MIT, if I recall, and NASA, using public money first. The basis of vaccines has been, the new mRNA vaccines has been driven again by public money in public university institutions. That primary research then gives way to private research, you know, in private companies, but it's the primary stuff happens in the public sector. And arts and creativity is exactly the same. Primary creativity takes place in the publicly funded environment. And it's only once you've worked out that puppet shows are a great thing to do that you then get private theatre producers willing to take the risk on their private puppet show.
So, Ken, when was the first time that you realised that you'd done something creative?
Ooh. Well, actually, the first time would have been I drew the house of my dreams when I was 7 years old, and my parents encouraged me to go and draw the other floors. They encouraged me to go and design the gardens. They encouraged me to go on and design that. And, you know, on the basis of that, I thought for ages I might be an architect. But then I think at university, really, I discovered that acting was going to be my thing.
Has anyone ever tried to dissuade you from being an actor?
Not really seriously. I've been very blessed like that. Everyone tells you there's no money in it. Everyone tells you not to do it because it's a freelancer's hell of spending 90% of your time out of work. So everyone tells you how incredibly difficult it's going to be. One thing which I've found two things heartening, actually. Number one is the fact that although I look around and on the surface of it, I've got a lot of competition, like I'm a product on a shelf. I'm a white middle-aged man with a beard who's not particularly tall or good looking. So there are lots of me when you look on the shelf for white middle-aged male actors with beards. But what you realise once you've been in the industry for a while...
You instantly killed mine and Rob's dream then, you know that, don't you?
White middle-aged men with beards, that's right.
Killed a stone dead, thanks. Just wiped out two members of the possible competition.
Once you realise that there's all that competition out there, you do start to notice that only about a small percentage, maybe 5% of those white middle-aged men with beards are working regularly, and it's because 95% of the other white middle-aged men with beards aren't so great to work with because they might be late or they might upset a cast member or they might be a bit creepy or they might be a bit demanding. So you start to realise that the competition pool is actually narrower than you thought. So that's very, very heartening. And the other thing that's also heartening is you start to realise that, like any other business, you have to be excellent in replying to messages. You have to be excellent at, you know, being nice on the phone kind of thing. And again, there are very few other businesses actually out there delivering excellence. So that's two things which are quite heartening. And so the bar for excellence is actually set quite low.
That's an interesting way of looking at it, actually. That's fascinating, that, Rob, isn't it?
Well, I'm just thinking ChatGPT does the answering the messages for me, and I might record your voice and use that as an AI thing for me on the phone. I think I would improve immeasurably with my business contacts.
No podcast next week, folks. Rob's too busy.
But we've got an AI-generated Ken the Actor.
It is fascinating as well, because I think, yeah, again, that's an interesting point, Rob, because coming on to that now, away from sort of your physical appearance on screen as an actor in whatever character as Ken the Actor, your voice is something, you know, as a voiceover for, say, documentaries or for adverts and stuff like that. You are a bit like a, I guess, like a graphic designer who's suddenly up against an app that can make people a logo that you normally charge £300 or £400 for. Your up against that competition. But that's really where being Ken the actor allows you to be, well, actually, I can be who you want rather than what you can get from something.
That's a really interesting way of looking at it, and thank you for that. Yeah. I do wonder if there'll become, across many arts, a human premium, where you can get a piece of artwork churned out for your bathroom, and you can go and buy that in Dunelm, and that's been reproduced by AI, or you can go to a specific painter and get a piece of artwork produced for your bathroom that's got a human premium on it. In the same way, you can get a voiceover that's AI, or you can have a human premium AI. Now, the AI that you're going to, the AI voiceover you buy off the shelf, that's going to talk about your product. But if you come to me for a voiceover for your product, I come from a marketing and a sales background.
So you actually bring quite a bit to the conversations, as well as just your skill. You
know? Exactly that. So we talk about artificial general intelligence. Yeah, but I'm not a general intelligence. I'm a specific intelligence. You've got to market a product. I've got specific intelligence, which will help you do that better. Plus, I sound like this. So let's put all that together in the package, and you're going to want to hire Ken the actor.
So, Ken, we're about to record the final segment now. So thank you for taking the time to speak to us today. And it's really interesting. I just think you've got a completely different view of the world. And from the first moment I met you with your approach when you came up to Tina and I that time, your observation skills and the way that you're able to use your voice. Do you think it's your approach, whether you think it's unique or not, but in your unique approach from my point of view, actually enables you to fulfill more things for people than they originally thought that they were going to come to you about because of what you can actually bring?
I really hope so. I believe every business does want to do that. They want to bring added value to their customers' processes, and they want to be paid for that. But they also try to bring a special secret sauce as well. And I really have felt the desire to do that. And I've been very, very lucky to experience that as well, whereby, for example, I've been working with a new filmmaker and they haven't realized that they get multiple phone calls before you turn up to set. And that in those multiple phone calls, I will be devoted to the character development, the memories the character's got to have, what costumes the character's got to have, and also their specific challenges that they may have had through the writing of it or the logistical challenges. So they get that full package and full spectrum of not just performance, but also logistics and experience. And I've been privileged to bring that extra stuff to just about every project I've been involved with.
So final question about social media and use of social media. It can be very prescribed. People are like, I've got this channel and I'm going to use it this way. When you get something like, you know, at Ken the actor, then clearly you have an opportunity to really kind of shape that channel in the way that you want. How do you use it? What would you say was your personal use of something like Instagram? For obviously it gives you the visual medium, but then how do you then use that to put yourself in front of people that you don't necessarily meet through creative coffee on a Wednesday at the depot or something?
Yeah, with social media, I have a challenge which a lot of one-person businesses have, which is that a good piece of social media can take multiple hours to create, and you just don't have that number of hours in the day. So aside from that challenge, I'm very much a student when it comes to social media. I'm actually learning from others. They say the best thing to do with your social media is to teach, is to give genuine knowledge value to other people. I have thought about doing that and ways to do that. At the same time, I think just from time constraints, I've been limited in my use of social media to just telling people what I'm doing. They say that's beneficial for an actor because you've got to look booked and busy. So I think that's where my usage is limited at the moment. But I'm learning. And if anyone out there wants to have a look at my Instagram and give me some pointers, I'm open. I need to learn. Thanks.
Yeah, give you some voiceover support in exchange for a little bit of social media advice. Rob, favourite actor? I'm going to put everyone on the spot.
Top of my head, Robert De Niro.
Ooh, Ken, favourite actor? You kind of mentioned Cate Blanchett, but I need you to kind of...
Yeah, on both sides, I think ultimately Daniel Day-Lewis, but Kate's in there as well.
Yeah. Me too. When growing up, and I always got this, it was always, if it had Robert Duvall in it or Gene Hackman, then I would watch it. Because I just think it would be like, even if it wasn't a subject I was interested in, there would be good characters, you know, there. You know, when you watch Robert Duvall in things like The Godfather, and then Gene Hackman in, like, you know, what's the one where he was doing the recording? Was it The Conversations? Yeah, those kind of things. I guess Steve McQueen is really interesting as well, because you talk about, you know, in Bullet he's good, but then, you know, he kind of plays a bit of a contradiction, I guess, in something like The Great Escape. So really, I guess it's almost like what are people's favourite actors? You don't really get to think about that. So favourite female actors?
Yeah, Cate Blanchett for definite. What I love is the surprise as well of finding actors that have been pigeonholed in one way, surprising us in totally different ways. And it should never come as a surprise, because underneath these people is a deep, keen and curious intelligence. And I've just seen Pamela Anderson blossoming into a role of a lifetime. And that's beautiful to see. And I saw the lady that played Dana Scully, Gillian Anderson, her Streetcar Named Desire. I think that's available on NT Live at the moment, National Theatre Live. Her Streetcar Named Desire is sublime. The effort, the commitment is 100% the entire way. And I should never have doubted that. But it's wonderful to see it come out there.
Brilliant. Ken, thanks for talking to us today.
Thank you.